You're on the Plants Grow Here podcast. I'm Daniel Fuller. Come along with me as we enter a hidden world of deep horticultural, ecological, and landscape gardening knowledge with featured experts, industry professionals, and enthusiasts.
If you are going to design a show garden to explain the mental state of an individual who returned from war, how would you approach it? In episode 177, I spoke with Irish landscape architect Peter Donegan, who won a gold medal at MIFCUS this year. He described how he approaches each of his designs as a daydream supported by a series of equations. In this episode, I chat with him about his garden design for MIFCUS in 2024. How does it differ from his previous design? Why is there an aeroplane in the garden? And what can up-and-coming designers do to rapidly progress their career and get noticed?
Welcome back to the show. How you going, Peter?
Daniel, thanks for having me. It's been a while since we saw each other. I think about a week now.
About a week.
3 days, 5 days, 4 days. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it's all good. Good to see you.
So, mate, the last time I talked to you, I had no idea what sort of a design you were going to do for this year and where you were taking your inspiration from. And I missed the Melbourne conference, or I missed the Melbourne, what did you call it, a night with Peter?
That sounds something terribly romantic, and I promise you it's not. I think the Institute of Horticulture Australian in brackets had worded the ticket sales as a day or evening with, my apologies, now it's all correct. And it was the first one, I think, was on the gardens that I had done in the French Castle and the two of them. And the second one was on gardens that I had designed for television. And then the evening one, which is the one you're referring to, was myself and Martin Semkin, who was the contractor of the previous garden, the Bamstone garden, for anybody who's got an iPhone or other in front of their hands at the minute. And the Bamstone garden was the one that obviously featured at MIFCUS, Melbourne Flower Show, that one gold. And we ultimately at this one announced at the tail end of that we were, or I was, and Martin was the contractor returning to Melbourne Flower Show together. So, yeah.
Okay, so last time you did a story about, it was a romance, it was a tragedy, it was a daydream. Like, how much of this are you taking into the new one? Is it just the daydream that you're taking in?
So for those who aren't aware, and I'll read what I wrote, because the process of how this all works, sometimes you have to reverse engineer it. To put that in context, if I design a patio with a stone structure, roof overhead, some lawn and some plants, just to make a fictitious but readily available garden, you phone the stone company, you know it's available off the shelf. You phone the plant suppliers, you know it's available off the shelf. You know the growing times, and you phone the lawn company, and boom, and you've got the elements of the garden already available. Yours truly doesn't do it the usual way you're beginning to gather, because they don't have rocks that have those set dimensions to fit within a 200 square meter garden that all of a sudden within 9 days appear as though they've always been there. It takes detail and it takes time, and you need the best by your side, but it's rocks that weigh 3.74 ton that can be supported below ground by a temporary frame that's made out of timber. The weight calculations and the measurements and the dimensions, I can't emphasize enough. The visiting public may not need to take the weight into consideration, but in order for the garden to be built, to be made real, to appear like a daydream, as I always word it, that's where you need those calculations definitive. So in this one, you'll gather it became a sort of a how do you top, or how do you come up with something completely different to what you came up with beforehand on one hand, and then on the other, you obviously have to be able to take the thing in my head and make it real. So I started with the following. And Martin said to me, you obviously don't have a drawing ready. I said, no. And he said, send me some lines of text. And so what I sent him was the following. And I'll read it for you so I get it correctly. The Garden is the story of a former military pilot who returns to a place he hoped to be able to recall home. Apologies to your listeners, by the way, if this sounds completely boring, but just bear with me. This will take, it's two paragraphs. The intended garden secluded remains as if he had never left and tells the story of a man, calm and placid in his demeanor, but now broken, though never through his own eyes to the outside world. The design aims to show what is when there is no headstone to one who has not fallen, and though his body not lost, there remains a mind that can never be the same as it was prior to. The garden features a fragmented path winding to an aged grass roofed log cabin and a plane, that's an airplane, the project that once was a wished for return to flight of a then younger man, not complete in its repair or trajectory, stalled by tree growth over time, stimulated only by the turbulence of what comes with the witness of conflict. And it remains as that. And that's ultimately what I sent him. And Martin rings me then and says, you need a plane. And I'm like, yeah. So if I turn around, and this is the bit where it becomes completely dangerous, and I said this at Melbourne University Burnley campus in front of the people of Mifkus. They'd seen the illustration, which is available on Instagram or Facebook or LinkedIn, whatever platform you're on. They'd seen it, but they'd only got the text as well. And I keep on saying this, there's a point at which nobody says no, but it's not for no apparent reason. There's a buildup of trust over a number of years. There's people who know people behind the scenes. They know you're a good man. You don't get it wrong. You've done it. Apologies for getting big-headed, but at the highest level. And I think when you ask for a plane, number one, and they don't say no, and within a day, you've then got two solutions, and then they're looking for a bit of text because you need other people to want to be a part of the garden, and they don't know what it's about other than you're putting a plane in a garden. And if you said to me, Daniel, you're putting an airplane in a garden, I'd giggle. Mm. But it's when you tell the story, and this is exactly what I said to Martin, and it's exactly what I said to the younger students in particular who were at the Mifkus talk. Falling on the highest platform it's not a bad thing to do, but you have to do it with a degree of eloquence if you're going to do it that way. And again, I'll say it, planes and gardens are, you've already got the white suit on, you're in Vegas and you're just waiting for the Elvis backup band to turn up. If the speakers go and the trombone breaks, you're for it. You're already in flames, and it's not a good position to be in. The point of making all of this elongated tomfoolery of a sort of a conversation is that the top of the page, and it's the word I keep using, is there's an eloquence to this garden, albeit it has a plane in it. And the point I made to Martin was very simple. If you take the garden that sits directly opposite the main water feature outside of the Royal Exhibition Building, you got the Royal Exhibition Building, you got the main water feature, and then you got the featured garden, which is where we are. If you walk around the corner and you go, oh my God, it's a plane, one, or two, you break your backside laughing, to put an Irish phrase in it or an Irish spin in it. What we're hoping is that you walk around the corner, see a plane, you read the story, or you've read the story, and then the bit that makes you sort of gasp becomes a, oh my God, this is bittersweet. And if that benefits who we hope it to benefit, then I get to take a stand back and say, well, my job is done. Mm. And it's a very dangerous game on one hand, but at the same token, assuming that it works, and assuming that it works is based upon me with a joint-sized head who has done it on the largest stage, Martin Semkin, who doesn't get it wrong, And when I produce a set of drawings, you sort of look to your fictitious wife of the horticulture trade, in this case, Martin. You look for that nod of approval. At no point in time does he say no. Done. Tick box, job done. He goes to his people and says, we've got this thing. Peter's come up with this brainwave. It's going to work. There's no it might if we do X, Y, and Z. It's going to is the only words you want to hear. But again, I'll say it. I'm not the beneficiary in the last garden at Melbourne Flower Show. And I'm certainly not going to be the beneficiary of this one. The show will benefit. I appreciate that, and rightly so, on one hand. And then on the other hand, the next part is as I've worded it there, if you fall in one of the great wars, there's a headstone for you. If you fall and your body's not found, your name appears on a wall. But if you go to a place of conflict and you come home and your mind is never the same, then one of the suggested names for the garden, not from me, was sort of an allude to falling through the cracks. And it's a delicate place to do that thing. And maybe because I'm not, to quote Martin, maybe because I'm not as such touting for work, I don't need 52 weeks work in Melbourne off the back of one show garden. I appreciate others who do. And again, I'm each to their own. And let me just segue, Daniel, for a moment. For your listeners, it's important for shows that you have somebody who plays classical music and does the books of Semper Firens, the box balls, does the peach trees, and does the lovely patio, and does the overhanging roof structure. Somebody does a swimming pool. You look at last year's show, or sorry, 23 Mifkus, you Charlie Albones, which was two steel containers with a rooftop garden on top, exquisitely finished. You go to the garden that Mint did. I described it, and I say this very eloquently, and I say it as a compliment, and I've said it before publicly, but it's like something I would have seen as an Irish guy from this hemisphere. It's like something I would have seen in Elton John's garden. It was magnificent in all of its finery. No disrespect, rightly so, won best construction. And you go to what Jason Hodges did as the Welcome Garden. And that's before you go into the boutique gardens, which are one on burnt wood or reforestation after a forest fire, if I can word it that way. There's one with a chandelier, which I think was Paul Pritchard's. You've got Bronnie Skinner's, which is succulent plants on an almost Tuscany-style setting. It was wondrous, but none of them were sort of comparable or on the same sort of even keel. And now you come to this one, which ultimately just tells a story, and it's a difficult story to tell. And maybe people are starting to gather just based on two gardens. You've got the story of a man, a grown-up, and statistically males are not good at speaking, inverted commas. We know this from the research on mental health. We know when you get into Irish males, which is even worse again, I say somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but at the same token, being genuine about it from a mental health perspective, not great at talking. My dad wasn't here. We were sort of rare to keep things in. And now you're going to a man, ultimately, which is they would have all been men in the First World War and the Second World War. It's not to say women didn't have a role in it, but we loosely base it on a man for the sake of statistically, we know that they're bad at talking, and there you go. So in this case, it works. The gas thing is when I said it to Martin about planes and conflict, and his first sentence back to me was his dad used to build the planes for the Royal Australian Air Force. And when he passed last year, those guys who flew those planes would have been at his funeral. And I was about to ask him, well, do you know them? Like, am I far off the mark? Because I would have done this research in France in 2018, 2019, 2021, 22, and obviously we did a second garden there in 22. So doing the research on my end is one thing, but when you bring that story to Australia, in this case Melbourne, you put it up on a platform, you need to make damn sure that you are tick box, tickety boo, and everything is a polished, it's the wrong way to describe it, but nobody can say it's not accurate. Does that make sense? Does it fit with you?
Yeah, it does, because you're putting in so much effort into the equations, as you say, to back up that daydream, and also the people who are helping you as well. If you got something wrong in the first stages of the planning, it, that sort of affects the gravitas of the whole work, would you say?
You've a chicken and an egg scenario where I knew the story was right behind the scenes. And so to give your listeners a bit of, backtrack on this one. When we did the first garden in 2018, which was the Jardin de la Paix, a garden of peace, it's not a war memorial garden. It's not a peace garden. It's a one of a series of gardens of peace. There's a mild difference, but it's significant. And the wording that was given to us, one of 14 designers selected globally, but this one being in a town in the Somme region of northern France, my one, the note that was given to me was that it's to remember the past and to be respectful of the past, but for the children of Peronne and northern France and across the world to have an eye to the future. And the issue, I think, in doing the garden and the moat was that it had fallen in the Franco-Prussian War, the First World War, and the Second World War. Bad things only happen in moats historically anyway. It was a 13th century castle. It used to have pointed tops like you would see a Disney castle done in. And then all of a sudden it's got battlements, which are the ups and downs or the U's and the N's that go around for defense. And now you're asking somebody to design a garden that will woo people in and allow them a place to smile, in short. It's very difficult when you consider what happened there and that they know their body's still there. But in through this, one of the exhibitions that they did was an exhibition, my apologies, called L'Amour. I hope that sounds correct in an Irish /French accent, but love to translate it back into English. And the L'Amour exhibition was a paradox, because they, at the time, what would have happened in the First and Second World Wars was they would have set the young men up with a pen pal, is one way to word it, but a bow or a love that they might hope that they might return to, something that would keep them sort of going. The marriages were sort of fast-tracked, but when they return, the mind is never the same. And if you go to the work of a guy called Otto Dix, and he's featured heavily in the museum part of the castle, I should add, which is Europe's largest war museum, housed within it. But Otto Dix shows the effect of being in the trenches or being a part of the conflict and what happens to the mind when they are in the middle of it to when they come out of it. And all I can say, I don't want to make your listeners turn off this podcast, but at the same token, it's harrowing. And when people came across to visit the gardens, mid-build journalists or whatever it might be, if they had children with them, I would divert them away from this part of the museum. It is that harrowing to see it. And I queried this with the director of the castle, because they show the propaganda from all sides. As he says, it's a war museum. It's not a just from our side. One of the things they show, for example, is a man with two children. You can say he's 40, he's a grandfather, he's a young man, but let's go between 30 and 60. And he's got two children by his side, and the two children in the poster are saying, so father, what did you do during the Great War? And it's almost like a poster campaign that makes you go, well, you've got two answers, and one is going to disappoint your children, and the other is going to make them go, well, we're so proud of you. Dick shows one of the posters, and it's two children. It's very similar, but not the same, looking at the father sitting in the armchair, but his head is mutated. And it's ultimately how he sees himself in the eyes of his own children. It's all of those things that you start to realize. And I won't go any further than that. You can Google these things, but it is harrowing, Daniel. And the point I think we spoke about at the time was, you know, if you're alive and if you return, then you sort of, as Martin rightly worded, there's a possibility that you can fall through the cracks. It's not to say that there's not help there. It's not to say that the armies, I'll use it a generic overall worldly term because we're two different hemispheres. I certainly don't want to cause anybody any upset, and I certainly don't want to get this wrong, but it's not to suggest that there isn't something there for somebody to help them, or there isn't assistance after they return. But if you've got something not correct of the mind for good reason, then I appreciate it doesn't matter sometimes how much help is out there. Sometimes you're just not the man you were when you left. And that's a difficult picture to try and paint. And again, I'll say it, if an airplane in the garden woos you towards that, one, if you like the garden, number two. And that's the remit we had with the garden and the castle, was that when you saw it 30 foot below street level in the dried up moat, the whole point of it was that when you walk towards it and you look down, it has to woo you in. If you don't go in, you walk away. So you can now go down the steps, right, and you go into the garden, you sit there. Do you then turn around at a lower level looking up with the towering columns above you and the towering walls above you? Do you sit there and go, this is, I'm going to sit, I'm going to have a cup of coffee, I'm going to smile, I'm going to chat, I'm going to pick some flowers, I'm going to bring them home, I'm going to put them on my table. Is that what you do? And in this case, it's not a garden that should upset you. It's just a moment in time where you're allowed to smile. You're allowed to say, I like it. If your children go, there's a plane, that's fine. And if in 10 years' time you turn around and go, what was that all about? If in 2 years' time, but the whole thing with a mental health, let's call it that for the moment, journey, the first part is conversation. And if a garden, lo and behold, gets you to do that because some guy who, say moi, decides, well, how do we grab the attention? And let's be straight and honest about it. I put a couple of trees in a straight line in a park and I stick a flat bench on that you'd have next to any bus stop or tube station. You go, well, it's a what lovely section of trees, and you keep on cycling past. You need people to stop. You need people to think. You need to go, what's this all about? And sometimes there's an Andy Kaufman in there, which is what you're looking at isn't entirely what you're looking at. And if that's the case, then that's okay. But maybe the similarity in the previous garden, and I say maybe, is that people smiled when they saw the garden. When they heard the story and walked through it and came out the far side, some came out with tears in their eyes. But that's me eking and searching for a similarity when in fact the two stories are completely different, because one is a guy who lives in hope, ultimately a cyclical hamster wheel, hoping the love of his life will appear. And she's hoping that he will say, I love you. And it's possible. Who knows where that story ended? That's in the eye of the beholder, is the wrong cliche to use, but you get what I'm saying. This one, we're just saying, look, there's a beautiful garden. It's a moment in time. Life has paused. That's it. And sit down, take a look, smile, enjoy it. Have a cup of coffee, talk about it. Don't get upset about it. It's just a garden at the end of the day. But if it helps and it changes life for one person or somebody identifies with it, then even better again, you know. And I hope my wording is correct. I hope if there's people listening to this that have family or friends or relations who are affected by conflict, then, you know, I hope I've got the wording correct for them all across the board. Again, I'll say it, we're live recorded, but we're live here. And I think we've done the research to make sure that we've got it from the historians in the castle in France to the people in Australia who we know behind the scenes, who Semkin, Martin and his family would know firsthand. We've done that research there. So if I've slipped a word in sideways or incorrectly, then certainly apologies. But ultimately, we're trying to do something for the better and for the positive, I hope.
Mm. Yeah, well said. Because it's such a sensitive issue, I think you're right to tread carefully there. Like, these are real people's stories who you're telling, and it's not just someone particular's story. This is actually a universal story for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's not, and I'll double underline this. This isn't based on one person. This isn't Ireland and Peter and I. Politics and religion can sit to one side. I think we've met in person. I'm a pretty upbeat kind of guy. I don't have time for dwelling around. I don't waste time wading in negative. I hang around with good people. My mates are immensely positive.
You're a fun guy.
I'd like to think so. But when it comes to work and gardens, the odd time you start to realize, and it's what happened here, Daniel, to just dwell back on it a slight bit, what happened in 2018 and 19 was I raised a question with the director of the castle, what happens to the young men now a little bit older when they return? If they're never the same, what happens to these guys? And it sort of became a thing that I would rear again and again and again. And it was unknown to me that Martin's dad was in the Royal Australian Air Force. It was unknown to me that he wasn't the only one logically who knew somebody who'd been in the military. And yes, it's a tricky story to tell. And you can't start every sentence with I'm sorry and an apology. At the back of it all, you have to turn around and go, look, this is real. You're right. But it's not based on one person. And we're trying to just paint a picture where people just stop and pause for a moment and say, okay, now if an Irish guy can do something to raise a question, that's all I'm doing. You just raise a question or you put it out there on a platform and let people take from it what they want to. There's no negatives. There's no badness in here. I'm not going to gain work from the last garden. I didn't. It's a statistic. To quote Semkin, you knew this. Who wants 45,000 litres of water on a 75-ton garden? Who's got the money for that is a different story. And who logically wants to put an airplane in? And I'll go back and say it. If I was clever, I'd have just designed a bit of a central boulevard for Central Park and Melbourne City Council would have rang me and said, look, we heard you're stunningly beautiful looking. You've got a great sense of humour. We love your garden. Get in. There's £1 million. But Moron here has things in his head that for the greater good of somebody else, in this case, or a love story in the last case, just seems to get the better of me. And if I don't do it, I won't sleep properly. You know? Yeah, I hope that does that make sense,
Daniel? It does make sense. It does make sense. Yeah, I think it's good that you're doing that. And it's like you said, MIFCUS is like a music festival, and we can't all be classic. Some of us need to be punks, mate.
I hope I'm not punk, but at the same token, if that's what it is, then you know, then that's fine by me as well.
It's not punk in that punk, you know, they didn't even tune their instruments properly, but it's punk in that it's probably a little bit left of field of what people would expect. But I do want to talk about the design itself. And, okay, so you've got this inspiration now, and people who are listening to this, they probably haven't been to MIFGUS 2024 yet, unless they're listening, obviously, next year. But let's say, so we walk into a scene where there's a plane and it's crashed, right?
The plane is, it was used for display. The crashed bit, we're on the fence on. We don't think so. We don't believe so. We think it's just old. We just think it's aged. We know the year, and I think it's 1988 or 87, approximately, of a plane. Fits the dimensions, which was the main thing. And we've got some news, which at this moment in time of recording, we can't say these things just yet. So they'll come out over time. Apologies, Daniel, as much as I like you, I can't give you the official full scoop on it. But look, we like the idea of. And it's, again, I'll say that sits well with me. It sits well with Martin, who was, who's I should say, his dad, rest his soul, who's only passed a year and a bit, who was part of the Royal Australian Air Force. Again, I didn't know that. Apologies if this is some of this is repeat to your listeners, but I think once he gave me the nod, then that was the first part, because it meant from a personal perspective, it didn't. It was striking the right chord, but it also meant from a professional garden building realization of a daydream again, we were on the right page and the same page again, holding hands. And I couldn't be prouder to work beside a finer gentleman and his family.
Okay. So the plane is intact, and I think that's even symbolic as well. It's like the vessel is intact, but it's not the body that's broken. There's another part of this person who, he didn't crash his plane. He's returned, or he's somewhere now. Maybe it's not the same place that he's returning to. And there's a beauty there. But how as a designer, how are you going to help portray, I don't want to say the brokenness of this person, but how do you portray what this person, how this person has changed now with your design?
So again, look, I said to Martin, and he asked a sort of a similar question, because we hadn't drawn anything. And when it's only of your imagination, I'll say what I say to the students. When you're designing a garden, day one design school, it's you're 17 years of age. We may have had this conversation before. It's Valentine's Day. You've got $10. The blinds are halfway down. Solomon Burke is playing on the radio. You light a candle. You're halfway there. And the whole point with the design students is very simple. You play AC/DC. It doesn't matter if the blinds are down or you've got 50 candles lighting. You've changed the whole mood of the room. And it's sometimes that simple. You put down a glass of orange juice instead of a glass of red wine. Glass of red wine. The room changes again. So in this one, again, I'll say it, I'm pedantic. There's an equation for absolutely everything and a drawing for just about absolutely everything. We don't get this wrong at all. I never have done, I should add. But in this case, what I said to Martin was, if I base it upon my dad after mom passed, it's not that the place went to complete neglect. It's not that the roof fell in and he never noticed. That's not the case. That's not what we're saying. This is a grown man with respect. He's got a brain. He's intelligent. He's not stupid. But what happens sometimes is the drain pipe, steel rounded in this case, breaks and falls. And it's a longer project than, say, cutting the grass. So the drain pipe goes to one side. The weeds now are grown into the grass that's on the roof. The grass is not cut. It's not wild. This isn't a wilderness. It's not that bad. It just should have been cut about 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And once you sort of get the point in between, you start to realize that the cracked cup still holds tea or still holds coffee. That's okay. That'll do. And I'll say this. You're talking to a grown man who lived on his own when he was 25, who bought his first house when he was 25. Only for somebody said to me, you need to get a cleaning lady, I would never have thought of it. Work gardens perfectly fine, but most men are complete morons. And most men on their own just can't cope. And that's just the way it is. And in particular, Irish men. And so it's only when I turn around and I say in Australia or in Cairns or in Melbourne, you know, my dad was a bit that. And nothing derogatory, but he was a bit this after man passed. Of course he is. He's allowed to miss his wife, the woman who he grew up with. Absolutely. Washing is allowed to be piled on top of the washing machine. Of course it is. I know I'm one of 8 children and my sisters came across and magically made everything disappear. But there's a point and there's a moment in time where you've got a grown man who misses things, misses his wife, and stuff is allowed to be ignored. He's got a somewhat of a license to do so. And that's the point. You've got to pick a day. It's not to say that the world, there's no help there. It's not that you've no family. It's not that you've no friends. It's not that things won't look a little bit brighter. But I think the funny thing about, or the not funny thing about conflict is it never really goes. It never really changes. And so whilst the house or the pipe or whatever it is might get fixed, again, I'll say it, you're focusing on just a moment. But it's a man who we've said it. We've discussed it. We've discussed it heavily, myself and Nicole and Martin and his family. And we've said, look, this isn't a derelict cottage. It's certainly not that. It's not of horticulture. It's not a rewilding where we've got weeds growing in an overgrowth of grass and you give me a gold medal because it's based on a bit of forest down the road where I get to stick a cardboard sign in it saying save the bees. It's not that. It's just the plants weren't put back this season. The grass should have been cut 2 weeks ago. There's a few weeds growing on the roof. They'll be fine. It's okay. The cup is cracked. It's fine. It'll be okay. It still holds tea. But it's got to tell a story and you've got to pick it at a pinch point moment. And where's the bit in between where it's, you know, should my dad not have had children? God, you think I'd remember that one. But should he not have had 8 children who'd come across and maybe help him? 4 amazing sisters of mine, or 4 amazing daughters in particular, I should add. You know, maybe things just wouldn't have appeared as rosy as quick. And again, I'll say it, this isn't the story of my dad. But when I alluded that to Martin, then he kind of went, gotcha. And I'm asking him then, am I far off the mark? And he's going to go, no. Now, I know somebody will turn around and go, of course, listen, I was X, A, B, or C. But this is a fictitious man. And when I said it to the castle about this in France, the Historial, who've got a full team of researchers there, they pointed me to one thing, and it was another exhibition they did. And it's the story of how they found a face for an unknown soldier. And by sole virtue of taking what we now know as modern technology, they put all of the faces that had been in conflict that they had in their archives together and turned it into one soldier. And as they said, somebody comes up and says, it doesn't look like my dad. And they're kind of going, I know. It's a million stories. There's a percentage, more than a million, my apologies. But at the same token, it's a million, billion, gajillion, infinity number worldwide. And I know this is in a show garden in Melbourne, and I know it's got an Australian angle to it, a very strong one. It's certainly not an Irish story, and it's very much a Melbourne story. And again, I'll say it, everybody so far has turned around and said, yes, you're on the right page. One, Two, it's a garden that at this moment in time doesn't exist. So I appreciate it's going to raise a few hairs.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's built, you hope, as we have done in the past, for 21 years under my own name and Martin Semkin, who's a very, very intelligent man, who have the hyper respect for, the most meddled man in the history of MIFCAS, you'd like to think that we've ticked the box and done the right thing to tell a particular story. And apologies again to your listeners if this is in any way a sort of a downbeat thing from a guy who's usually entirely upbeat and a little bit more jovial.
Well, I don't think that you have to be jovial all the time, and I don't think that that's an expectation that you should be setting on yourself.
Well, it's coming from a guy who's not great at talking about himself, or from an Irish perspective, which is very similar to the Aussie way of looking at things. And again, I'll say what we discussed before on the previous episode. You know, you've got tall poppy syndrome, and my joke is I had my dad. I referenced dad in this in a very jovial sense, but I'll quote what I said when I spoke at the APL Awards, the Association of Professional Landscapers in London, and I was their guest speaker. And my opening lines were, you know, I was one of 14 designers selected globally. By default, I represented Ireland. It was a 13th century castle. The first garden is 30 foot below street level. It was inaugurated with all of the embassies, including the Irish embassy present. And I came home and said to Dad, sorry, he said to me, how did you get on in France? I knew I had six words to give him the answer. And so I said, you know, Dad, in France, they call me Monsieur Architect. I couldn't think of anything shorter to say. And he went, yeah, why don't you cut the hedge out the front and I might make you a cup of coffee. It's just the way things were. When people asked me how I was growing up, you said, I'm fine, superb. How are things? How are you? You palmed it all off. It's changing now, Daniel. It's changing with the newer generation coming in, where it's okay to not be okay is the cliche. It's okay to say you're not okay. But of an old school, in particular Irish, and again, I'll say it from speaking in Melbourne and Cairns and having been in Melbourne in April, when I say tall poppy syndrome and tell the story of my dad, they think it's hilarious.
I think we can all relate with that. Even if our dad wasn't that bad, society certainly is a bit like that at the very least, the proverbial, you know, the over. What did Jung say about it? Anyway, you get what I'm saying. Yeah, it's like.
Yeah, but if you take the last garden that we did, myself and Semkin at Melbourne, which is the story of a grown man who ultimately can't say three magic words, I love you. He can't say it. The poem at the edge of the garden is a poem called How I Feel. And the opening line on that is, you are an evergreen and I am a leafless tree. The closing line is, the most romantic thing I can say to you is, you're the one I want to have problems with. Some people giggle at that as a poem, but in reality, I would suggest most people in Melbourne, of the 100,000 plus who came through, that poem was published. They read that. The amount of notes I had to say, that was my dad, that was my sister, that was my cousin, that was my brother. That's how we were reared. And the similarities between, I can't emphasize it enough, when you go to a conflict thing, it changes ever so slightly. And that's where it requires a Semkin to say, yeah, Dad would have been a bit, or the people who were at his funeral would have been a bit. It requires the permissions. It requires the research. You know, you don't put on exhibitions in international war museums that are paradoxical but titled Love and not do the research. I'm not a historian, I should add. I'm just a retailer of stories invertibly in my head that I hope make people smile, and that's all I am. I'm just a grown man with little people in my head saying, you know, it'd be a good idea, or you can make a bit of a difference. and you can tell a story that you hope ticks a box for a lot more people than you actually realize. And when that's accepted by Melbourne Flower Show, and when it's accepted, I should add, more importantly, by the people of Melbourne and the people who visit there, then I think we know we're on the right track. It's just in the same way we did it in Melbourne 23, and getting that detail correct, which retells that story intrinsically. The detailing, I think you'll agree, Daniel, on the previous garden was absolutely spectacular. And I think it's just nailing it on this one that we get it absolutely spot on, and even more so because of the story that we're going down the road on. If I'd have done this garden about a Formula One racing driver who, you know, liked coffee on a Saturday morning, this would be a dream. It'd be easy peasy. But it's more difficult, and sometimes why not?
Yeah. Why not make it difficult? I want to know, so when does Mifkis again? Is it May?
March.
Wow, it's coming up, isn't it? So what have you got on your plate now? Like how much work is there that goes into this before people see the garden itself? You know, from your perspective, obviously there's a mad rush once you get there in terms of building. But what are you in the stages of doing now? Like, is the design finished? Are you just waiting to hand it off, or are you working madly, or what's going on now?
So we're Tuesday, November 7th at this moment in time.
Your time. It's actually the 8th.
Wednesday. Oh, you're funny. God, you time travelers are crazy. So we are the first week in November, to put it in context. The designs for this garden were done, I'd say we started this in September. And we would have, I would suggest, the most of the garden complete. And when we get into that, we would have it down to the brass tacks. Now, I say we, this is a family. And again, I'll say what I said to you, Daniel, there are no photographs of me holding any award on my own. At Melbourne Flower Show in particular, I'm not photographed on my own with that award, for good reason. I'm a guy with a daydream, but my note earlier on to a gentleman who we both know called Ben Francis is that the best gardens are always made better when you're surrounded by the best. The worst thing a designer can do, in my opinion anyway, is when you say, well, I'm surrounded by the best and we made this beautiful garden. Oh, Oscar time? Oh, get out of my way. Get off the stage. I'm standing on my own here. I take the photograph and good luck to you. It doesn't work like that with me. So when I say it's a, you know, it's a hand-holding, I refer to Martin sometimes as my wife or my horticultural husband, whatever, which way you want to work that one. But even when you get into the Semkin family, one of the conversations we had heavily was about Anne, his wife, and his daughter Nicole at the table setting for Mifkis 23, the Bamstone Garden. That probably would have taken them somewhere in the region of about 3 to 5 days, cumulative, between the two. That's just one part of a garden. But when you look at an entire crew coming home where it's been raining for basically 48 hours solid, your clothes are damp, your shoes are soaking, you come in the door, and if at 9:30 at night you've got to start preparing a wholesome meal, which isn't going to happen, you're going to have a bowl of cornflakes, fall asleep, your clothes are going to be damp the next day, you're already starting bad. The cogs are going to start falling off pretty quick. So it is an en masse family, but I think myself and Martin have a similar similar mindset, which is work bloody hard. Do not get this wrong. You do not get it wrong for 20 years. We know people who know people in London. He doesn't get it wrong. His reputation precedes him before I even get there, and vice versa. we're on the same page, we're both on the road at 5:30. The joke made was that I was the only man in a suit. That's one. But when you look to either side of me, Martin Semkin and Dean Cartwright, foreman and owner of Semkin Landscaping, were dressed as appropriately as me. The only difference is they had overcoats on because it was raining. And big Egypt Irish fella thought that Melbourne would be sunny. I didn't realize I was leaving Ireland and moving to Ireland, if I might word it that way, for at least from a weather perspective. So I didn't have an outer coat to hide anything else. We were invariably on very much the same page, built from the same cloth, and I have to say, you couldn't ask for a better hard-working family. That's one. I think the other part of it is when you look at a drawing which is available online, this is an easier garden to build than what we did in March. And I will quote Martin by saying, it is the most difficult garden he's built. I joked on stage by saying it's the most difficult garden he's built in his show garden career. And he said, no, it's the most difficult garden he's built in his life. It's certainly the most difficult show garden I've ever designed. And my note logically is that that Bamstone garden will never happen again. This one, to an extent, is a stroll in the park. But of a build, it's easier.
With the plane. The plane is the easy one. The one with the big rocks was the hard one.
That's because you had 45,000 liters of water contained.
And the water.
In a wooden frame, and then we put 30 ton of weight into that wooden frame, and the construction was just exponentially ridiculous. But what a beautiful daydream. This one, we've sort of made life easier. I knew what I was doing, but we couldn't do the same. So by default, it has to be an opposite. The roof of one tilts forward, the other tilts upwards. There's zero water virtually in this garden. The other one was 65% water. Rocks don't exist, etc., etc. But the stories are completely different. But I knew from a design perspective, it sort of had to be. I think where we probably are at this moment in time, and I'll say it again, is the behind the scenes of getting that story correct. And I say we're probably at 98% of the story, but that's nothing to do with the construction. And it's paying, I guess it's being respectful of somebody. And I'll put it to you this way, Daniel, if I'm to do a garden for my, let's say my dad or my mom, both now passed, you know, the first thing I do is I'd go to my siblings and say to them, and that's where you realize the time is actually being spent. And then once you get into that, you realize one is going to turn around and go, you need to talk to Auntie such and such just to make sure, because, you know, she was, you know, very close with Mom. And all of a sudden, if this isn't about the garden, it is, but it's that respectfulness, that those courtesies, those the way I was reared, a guy who still walks on the outside of the road, who can't but start apologizing even before I order a pint of Guinness, never mind a cup of tea. Do you mind if I have a saucer? Sorry about that. You know, it's a really, really odd one to be in, but it's a right way to do it when you get into a story like this.
I can't wait to see it, mate.
Yeah. Well, you say that and half my head is kind of gone. Could I not just come up for this?
A native garden or something like that. A native Irish garden.
Well, let's get into that one if I can, just as a mild change of subject. Because we had this conversation at the Botanic Gardens in Cairns. And one of the questions that was made was about, it was two people on the same page with a horticultural education. Both of us turned around and said, the idea behind having a native only garden is magical. And both of us went, yeah, let's just leave that there. and I'm all for it, but the point I think both of us made was in reference to the garden in France. If nobody likes the look of the garden, not me and you, we're already converted. We're the horticultural heads who were already in it. But if the Joe public, if my daughter or your daughter or your next door neighbor's daughter who's 12, who doesn't need to know what natives are just yet, if she doesn't turn around and go, "Mom, let's go in," it's you need a bit. And at the same token, I'll also say, if you're of a show garden, it's important. Do one with natives, do one completely without, then do one that's a mix of the middle. And now you have the classical music, the AC/DC and the Elton Johns all on the one playing field. And that's what makes a good garden festival. Yeah, absolutely.
I love it. Peter, at the end of every episode, I always like to ask guests one more question. Now, it can be on topic, or you can choose to just talk about whatever you want to talk about. Is there anything else you'd like the listeners to know about?
We've had this before, Daniel.
But yeah, I know. You've got to think of a new one, though. Or what have we not talked about today? What have we failed to touch on?
Do you know the funny thing? And I'll give you one. And I said this to Alan Burnell, who's the president of the Australian Institute of Horticulture. The garden in the castle, in the first one, when we were planting that garden, it was Santalina and lavender. So for your listeners who aren't aware, an off-pungent lavender and a sweet, as we would know, lavender. So you get a sweet and sour sort of smell. And it's something that Lutyens would have used in his designs. Lutyens, for those who aren't aware, designed Tiepval Memorial. If you don't know that, it looks like a giant-sized arc de triomphe surrounded by trees. But most of them are sort of large buildings in the middle of large buildings, he says. But tall structures in the middle of a landscape and designed to be that way. But the smaller planting that was used was invariably of scent. But we're trying to bring people back to a point in time. And so you put these in and you show them differently. But when we were planting them, I damaged them intentionally so that they would grow incorrectly. And the arched seat is based upon a part of Inishmore. For those who don't know, that's on an island off the coast of Galway, about 9 o'clock on your Ireland map. It's where they filmed the Banshees of Inishirin, the Colin Farrell film. One of the most beautiful landscapes I've ever seen in my lifetime. And this part of the island, Dundacahar, better known and are translated into English, it's the Black Fort. It had this arched stonework around, which I don't particularly know why it was there. The monks had built it, built completely out of limestone. And we realized that when you're sitting on this seat, this stone wall, you can't but not face each other. And we thought it was a lovely, friendlier thing to do. So we brought the soil back up and we tilted the seat at about a minus 11 degree angle. But we had it at about, say, 250 high. So it's about the height of what we would call a poof. Or a small seat that you might sit on next to the fire. So to put that in context for your listeners, bus stop seating is at about 400 high, 450. It's tilted forward. When the tube comes in, you're perched ready to walk forward. But when I drop it to about 150 and I tilt it backwards, you're slouching on your chairs. You're a 13-year-old kid in school leaning backwards in geography class. You don't even realize it. So when we bring the soil up to almost the bottom of your waist, and then we put scented sweet and sour in it, you don't even realize it, but you're staying sort of longer. And when we subdue the colors and we change it to an off green and an off blue and everything is a sort of a calm. We do street planting and we want it to be a busy, young, bustling street. We make it like popping candy reds and purples and yellows, and it's all the opposites on the color wheels. But in this one, it's just a calm. And when we were doing the mortar joints, unknowns to the to the construction team, I took out parts of the mortar and replaced it with natural yogurt and soil so that the moss would grow into it faster and quicker. I lipped because the seat is at a tilt, I lipped the concrete up the back knowing it would break off, but the water would reside there a little bit longer. So it would go mossy off green. And when you look at that garden, we showed it at the talk that you missed because it was geographically not possible to be at. It was funny. I was actually looking at the large screen going, you know, this is a 3-4-year-old garden.
But it looks like it's older.
With the backdrop is these tall columns that have fallen 3-4 times. And so you can't build a brand spanking new set of apartment style seating and render it correctly and put it next to this. Now, when you get into the inner courtyard, the remit on that is to woo in a new audience and hide or semi-hide this brutalist concrete extension to the back of, designed by an architect, my apologies, called Henry Siriani. But outside, I think that was probably one of the things that nobody really knew. And the first time I told that story was at the lecture in Melbourne.
I do remember you saying some of the stuff about the yogurt. I can't remember if you said it in our last chat, but I remember you saying it during the Cairns talk as well. I think you did mention about the yogurt in my last talk, but I just think it's just an interesting insight into, you know, like it's not just a garden. It's like there's a lot of thought that goes into these places.
Look, anybody can build a stone wall. And anybody can stick a few.
Well, that's not true because it's very technical to do that. Have you ever seen someone who just thinks anyone can build a brick wall trying to build a brick wall?
Yeah, but no, but I think if you're sort of set on and in particular in show gardens versus you know time in a real garden. People can see, well, it's a year old, it's 2 years old, it's 3 years old, it's 5 years old. God, in 10 years' time, the trees here are going to look amazing. They appreciate budgets a little bit better. In show gardening, there's no hiding place. You either get it right or you fall flat in your face. And I should add a really excellent interview you had with young Ash Walker. And I think you quizzed him on where his career was going. For those of your listeners who haven't heard it, go back. He's far more entertaining than I will ever be in my lifetime. But the note that you asked him about his career, and I can't remember what it was that you said to him, but he referenced me in it, and I was going, my ears pricked up. And I think he said he was going to go and do it at the highest stage rather than the lowest. When you queried it, he said, basically, Peter Donegan said, you know, if you're going to go down in a ball of flames, you may as well do it at the Premier League as versus fail at the lowest level and then try and work your way up again. And half my head was going, he should not listen to my plane airplane in a garden wasn't announced at that time. He should not rocks in a garden. Don't listen to me. I'm the wrong man, you know. But what a gentleman, what an excellent interview.
Thank you. Yeah. I'd like to actually go into that just before we finish, because I think if there's someone there listening who goes, well, no, I don't want to start at the top level, I want to start somewhere easier. Why on earth are you saying that? Can you explain like your mentality and like the wisdom behind what you're saying there? Because it is something it is a wise thing to say in a lot of ways. Can you explain why someone should go straight for the top instead of playing in the kiddie pool?
Well, I think there's two parts to it, and look, when I was 30 years of age. We won an award for what was a 27-acre 17th century estate for the design and realization of The year before, we'd won an award for a 55-acre 18th-century estate. But when we win the second award, another person comes up to me and basically says, you know, you should never have got that job doing that. I didn't apply for the French gig. I was asked, would I go for it? Most things that happen in my life that are amazing, they're really good stories if you tell them incorrectly in a pub. Mm. But because nobody would believe how they all sort of happen. And invariably, it's Daniel rings Peter and goes, you'll never guess what. Now the director of a flower show, we need something to achieve X. You're the person who makes daydreams real in a very short space of time. Go for broke. It's not based upon nothing. But if you're the outsider and you only know jovial Peter, then fair enough. But if I go back to to being 30 and 31, the point that was made or that I made when I was 24 and I went out on my own, the people were saying, is it your dad's business? You don't have a beard and a big woolly jumper. You don't look like an old man in a potting shed. You get to 31 and you don't have a beard and a big woolly jumper and you don't look like an old man in a potting shed. You do show gardens because they make you smile and you fund them yourself. And people say, well, that's the wrong thing to do. And I know it's easier to focus on the negative criticism, but when you're 6 years of age and you're putting geranium cuttings into horticultural shows and people are saying young people should be not seen and not heard or whatever the cliche is, and then you get to 47, you know, you kind of have to turn around and go, hold on a second. When I was 6, when I was 24, when I was 31, when I was 42, there was an old, inverted commas, person there, I say old, maybe of mind, who's sitting there on the top of the pulpit saying, you shouldn't be, and I'm sort of going, all of my life, get out of my way, get behind me. I'm not doing anything wrong, I'm not doing anything to upset you. This is a good place from my heart that I'm trying to portray in a horticultural landscape. I'm an educated man. I've done my research. I'm well-reared. My mom and dad were extremely hardworking. Nothing in my heart is badly placed. Now let's get to this. This is horticulture. And the same group of inverted commas old, I say of mind, people were complaining that no young people were coming into horticulture. So you sort of can't have it both ways. You can't have classical music and oboes and cellos playing only because this is what the person sort of says. And in my head, nothing is impossible. The Amshamokanilach, the tents we used in particular in the garden in Melbourne, was very much about there is a chance. There's a one in a million chance, but there's a chance. When you've got an education, that percentage, and I'm not a gambling man nor a betting man, but that percentage comes all the way down to this is 100% possible. How come I can't do it? Get out of my way. So if I take Ash Walker, your friend, he's got a horticultural education. The formula is don't be a moron. Don't walk around upsetting people. Say hello, goodbye, and thank you to the bus driver. Don't forget to tip your barmaid. Whatever the other cliches are, fine. Surround yourself with the best. Does Ash tick those boxes so far?
Yeah. Sure.
If Ash Walker rang me in the morning and said, I want to put a show garden together, will you come in and help me? You'd have no named credit on it. Would I do it? Yes, I would. Case closed. So now is it possible? I don't mean because I'm on board. No, I mean, is it possible even without Peter? You just need a replacement.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then anything is possible. Then what are you doing going into the small garden competition? Go straight for the top. If you get it wrong, so be it. What's the worst that can happen? And I'll go back and say exactly what I said to Ash. We had one man at a show garden. This is 2008, who used expletives towards me because he didn't like it. Now, 100,000 people come in. One out of 100,000 is a very small percentage. okay, put the decimal point where you see fit. I did pretty okay. Fine. And at least he was honest and he told me. Good luck. The point I made in that was, I remember saying to him, it's just a garden. Nobody cut the cord on your coffee maker with a scissors intentionally. Nobody robbed your wife's handbag. Nobody took the tires off your car. It's just a garden. There's 29 other gardens here. It's okay. The next person smiles and it ends up opposite the main stage of what is Ireland's version of Glastonbury, whilst the Sex Pistols are headlining, as you're well aware, that garden in particular. But nobody ever drew a garden and said, let me think how I might piss somebody off. Nobody in their right mind. If I want to piss somebody off, I'll just throw a small pebble made of custard or something soft at their window so it might not break it. And they might go, well, I'm allergic to that stuff. Whatever that might be. But there is another side to this, which is the amount of people who said to me, you know, and I had one girl at one of the talks and she said, I was thinking about doing a border garden at Melbourne Flower Show. And I said, just go and do it. And she said, I'm a bit nervous. And I said, I'll help you. She said, would you ever do it? And I went, God, no. There's no hiding place in those dimensions. I've only ever done, or I'm invariably used to doing, bigger spaces, and my brain works on a different trajectory, planetary system, says you anyway. But in that context, if that's that, what I'm saying, Daniel, is if the border garden is, if you feel that that's out of your reach, then go for it. But if you're at Ash's sort of confidence level or Ash's sort of brain level, and you think that show gardeners out here may be a stretch, then my head is kind of going, well, you know, go on. You know, you're always whispering, go on, do it. But if you've got the best buyer side, and I'm not saying you walk in blind with a Zorro sort of, one of these things you wear, sleeping mask on an airplane. I'm not saying be foolish about it. What I'm saying is, if you're wise about these things, you make the phone calls, you surround yourself with a Peter and a Daniel, and Martin Semkin and Nicole Semkin, the entire family, and you sit down and go, gentlemen, I want to do X. And they go, fine, no problem. Show me what you've got in your arsenal. And you go, this is what I've got. Go big, go home. It's up to you. And sometimes the big thing to go for is a border. Sometimes it's to hang a basket competition. You've got to start somewhere. I just always went big. That's the difference. And why not? I'm not saying it works for everybody. The opposite, I should add, and I will caveat all of this. And for any of your listeners who want, I'm more than happy to have a more in-depth conversation with them one-on-one if they want to. That's absolutely not a problem. Please feel free to get in touch. But at the same token, the opposite, as I've already said to you, is you do a large stone garden at a Melbourne International Flower Show, and people say, I don't know where he's getting this love thing from. Gravity takes effect and an Irishman falls over. You tell a story of a plane in a garden as part of ultimately a mental health picture. And people say, well, I don't get it. En masse. Now you start to fall over. The garden will be extremely well constructed. No question about that. But the devil's in the detail when you get into something. So the pedestal, the plateau, the thing that you, the oasis in the distance, tends to get bigger and bigger. Maybe in my head, the challenge becomes a little bit different. But it's always the unachievable. And it always has to be a little bit where you stretch yourself and push yourself. And if you don't push yourself, then the Beatles would have remained with Love Me Do. You never heard Sgt. Pepper's. The Stones would never have come out with Sympathy for the Devil. And I'll give you one of the finest garden talks I ever did, which alluded to gardens where people were critical. They were critical of sort of things in young people in horticulture. And it was me playing the clip from, which is available on YouTube, of the news reports of there's a young man in, playing at a music festival and he's shaking his hips, and it was Elvis in 1957. And it was the grown-ups going wild that that this was the thing. And you scratch your head and go, God, it's mental that people sort of thought like, you know, that now we say it. But I think it's mental that, you know, children should be not seen and not heard. And then we turn around and go, why doesn't little Johnny, who's 36 or 57, you know, speak to me anymore? It was a generational thing, Daniel. You know, so look, things change, life moves on. And in garden design, I think it's important that that evolves as well. And, you know, look, don't get me wrong. What was it? 20 years ago, you would have fake grass that allowed in show gardens. And nowadays, it's sort of cast out right from it. Yeah,
that's the way the world goes. You've got to keep moving forward. The young silverback will take the old silverback's place, and the world just keeps moving.
And I'll remain as stunningly good looking as ever. Great sense of humor. I'm joking. That's the fun.
That's the dream. That's the dream. Yeah, world.
Yeah. One day I'll be good looking like you, Daniel. Really, I'm just in your shadow. Someday I'll
maybe grow. Maybe.
Yeah. Never.
Yeah. Thank you so much for a great chat again, Peter. Appreciate your time, mate.
You're more than welcome, Daniel. And genuinely thank you from the heart. I've never not smiled listening to your recordings. And as glorious as this sounds, but I'm a better, happier fella because of what you do in your spare time. And congratulations and well done on your award from the Australian Institute of Horticulture as well.
Thank you, mate. You are an absolute sweetheart. This is the thing that people don't know about Peter. He is, I mean, you probably get it because I've been talking to him on the podcast, but he is a beautiful human being and a very good man to have a pint of Guinness with. He would never mix it with Sprite, as one person in our crew did.
They did what?
You saw it, didn't you? You saw him doing it.
I thought that was just a dream or a bad dream, but I thought it was just a dream.
No, that happened. It really happened.
That's the modern day equivalent, as one person worded it to me. That's the equivalent of me saying to an Australian barman, this is not my words. He said, can I have, you ask him, can you have a can of Foster's? And I went, even I'm not that stupid.
What is Foster's? What is it?
I know.
I've never seen a can of Foster's.
No, but I'm aware, because I'm not completely moronic, that there is a perception of Irish people, and there's a perception of Australian people.
It was Aussies, with their shrimps on the barbie.
Look, there you go. And people tend to say Turalura a lot in exchange. So, like, you know, horses for courses. And,
there you go.
It's all good. I don't get stressed over much.
Mate, I'll talk to you very soon, if not before MIFCUS.
I look forward to it, Daniel. Pleasure as always. Thanks again,
mate. Always a pleasure.
Peter is a good example of a designer who dreams big. He takes a project brief and puts his whole heart and soul into it to achieve a whole that's bigger than the sum of its parts. Is there an opportunity for you to take this approach in your daily work? I don't want to encourage you to be delusional and to step outside of your project brief, but there are times when we can take a calculated risk to be vulnerable and express something that we feel deeply. If you'd like to get in touch with Peter, check the show notes for a link to his LinkedIn, Instagram, and his contact page on his website. If you haven't listened to our previous conversation in episode 177, put that one on next. Otherwise, check out Restoration, Rejuvenation and Renewal Pruning in episode 128, How to Prune Trees Correctly in episode 96, and Intro to Integrated Pest Management in episode 33.